Hello.
Hello!
Welcome to Movie Banter.
Shot it rapid, straight down to business.
Well, we've got things to do. We've got a film to review.
We really haven't. It's a slim week.
We've got a film to review.
we've got a lot of banter to do. That's the main thing.
I'm Paul Carenza.
I'm John Sams.
And I'm Jennifer Masters.
It's a lovely summer's day. Jenny wants to do it outside, but
yeah, they won't let
we're
me.
Told we have to do the podcast instead.
Hey.
That's the British smut you all tune in for.
Hands up, who didn't see that coming?
Yes.
Which in itself sounds like
you're
amazed.
There you are. So, this week we have films.
Oh, it's packed to the rafters with Prince of Persia.
Prince of Persia.
Yeah.
And half of Bad Lieutenant New Orleans, Port of Call, Prince of Persia, Sands of Time 2.
Yes. No, you saw half of Bad Lieutenant.
I've seen half of
Lieutenant for the Americans among us.
Exactly. Mm.
Yes, and why you saw half of that may come out in due course.
We will come to that later.
Fair enough. And also we've got looking back on last week's mini banter with the films we were thinking we'd see and then saying why we didn't see some of them.
Yes, indeed, yeah. Because there were things out. Well, should we dwell on that now? Should we just jump straight to the reviews of films we haven't seen?
Well, yeah, because it can be quite entertaining. Because generally speaking, there's good reason why we haven't seen certain films.
So, for example, I mean...
What was out?
Well, one of the big films I've heard a lot of people talk about was Sex and the City 2.
Yes.
None of us
wanted to see it, ultimately. And ultimately, we're not professional paid reviewers. We do this for your and our entertainment. And seeing Sex and the City 2 would not entertain us. And so...
Basically, if people paid us money...
Oh, that's true.
Then we would be professional film reviewers.
Then
we would go and see it. Well,
yes, absolutely.
In fact, if you paid me, I still wouldn't go and see it. let me put it that way.
No, I absolutely would, because then I'd have good reason to jump on the bandwagon of every other critic saying what an appalling nightmare of a film it is.
I would go and see this film.
Because you are a girl.
Not the only reason. The reason is that my friend, Esther, wants to really go and see it.
Right.
And unfortunately, I haven't seen the first one. So, I better see that one first.
Yeah, I don't think it's that complicated, to be honest.
Yeah.
From what I gather, again, just quoting other people's reviews now, is that it's not only sexist, but also racist.
Yes.
Generally.
Look at these wacky Muslim countries.
Let's wear
crazy
some revealing clothes.
Which is Samantha throwing condoms at all these people, saying, just go and have sex, you crazy fundamentalist Muslims. And
at the same time, one point someone did make is that the character of Samantha is always meant to be quite outrageous and pushing everyone's buttons. The fact that she's doing it to a specific religion isn't necessarily worse, but at the same time you're just thinking, really? Is that just in that scene to characterise what she's like?
But you don't want to push potential suicide bombers' buttons. I think that's one important
thing. They do enough of that themselves.
The whole point before was that, okay, you may be a bit frustrated, let's liberate yourself, express yourself, rather than we're going to be completely disrespectful and just insult you.
Yeah.
And also, see again, having not seen it, I can't say this, but I never really watched the TV show, but saw occasional bits of it, and I wasn't the target audience. Yeah, but I could see sort of the appeal of it.
Yeah.
And there was a degree of consumerism, but also the whole women in New York and getting on with life and all the rest of it. And the films seem to have kind of lost that, apparently. And it's now mainly just, look, shoes and dresses.
It's basically shoes, isn't it?
Exactly, and weddings, and just that's the film. And it just seems to be they've lost what made them...
And in terms of this sort of feminist thing, yeah, sisters, you can do it yourselves and all that sort of thing. But you look at the film, and from what I gather, is that they all live in these wonderfully glorious apartments and they've got second homes and third homes and holidays overseas. And, they're staying in these extravagant places. I know the part of the film is about them getting one of the most expensive hotels in the world for free.
Yeah.
But throughout the rest of the film, they are buying a lot of expensive stuff.
Yeah.
None of them have that high-paid jobs that can cover it all. So they're all kind of... Although the film is sort of, yes, you can do it yourselves, but get a really rich husband. He'll buy you lots of shoes.
Get showbiz friends. Go on.
Yeah, which does seem to be missing the point. Or at least not sending a great message out to people.
Yeah, to be fair, though, we haven't actually seen the film. And unfair, I'm not going to make you guys go and see it. But if I do go and see it, I will let you know.
You will make us go and see it.
I would never do that. I think
never
it's telling that, because Jen is obviously the token girl of the banter crew.
Hello there.
And even you don't really want to go and see this.
Yeah, but I'm practically a boy, as you keep on telling me.
And eventually you'll start to believe us.
Yeah. I don't know, it just doesn't really... I used to really, really like the TV series, and I don't know, it just hasn't grabbed me. I like other girly things.
I've heard as well that in this one, although in the TV series it was Sex and the City, because it's about, you know, often there would be sex and it would be in a city. In this one, there is no sex and there is no city.
Right. So it's just and.
It's just
and two.
Yes, exactly. Brilliant. Neither sex nor the city is what it should be called. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, which is kind of losing the point. Actually, the only other point I will make, just I think it's in Roger Ebert's review, he just mentioned one scene which just annoyed me for existence, which is Kristen Davis's character, Charlotte, is on the phone to her friend while she's baking with her children, and one of her children puts two jammy handprints on her vintage dress, and she goes, "Oh no, my vintage something, whatever dress it is." And you're saying, "What? There's no mother in the world would be wearing any sort of vintage dress while baking with your kids, because it's going to get covered in mud.
You're going to have to learn sometime, exactly. So why not now?"
Exactly. And it's just utterly unbelievable. Unbelievable or really stupid, and in both cases it's annoying.
What I'm finding more annoying about this film is all the merchandising and all the articles, and all girls magazines at the moment have got articles of how's to get the look and New York Living, and
you
I don't
look
care
like a leathery old
I don't
crone.
Want to yes, also it kind of annoys me slightly, because this is going to go on to Sands of Time as well, it's sort of taking up this sort of Arabian feel, and I'm like, no, go get your plastic hands off it, leave it alone.
Actually, there's one other comparison which came up, is that Kim Cattrall, I think, it still looks very good, but she is now something like 51, 52. Could maybe be. And in the Golden Girls, Blanche, the sexually promiscuous but meant to be old woman, was about 49.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it's something. It's not. So I may not get the exact numbers, but I think Kim Cattrall just has the edge.
Oh really?
Why do you know this?
It was on Slash Film, I think.
Okay.
They just pointed out the ages. I didn't actually.
Joe was watching his Golden Girls box set once again, and thinking, "Hang on, this doesn't look like the Sex and the City box set."
Never question.
Watching that
never
one.
Never question my Golden Girls trivia knowledge. But I haven't compared all the other ages. I don't think, you know, the grandmother, I don't think anyone compares to her somehow age-wise.
Which one's the grandmother? Is that Sarah Jessica Parker?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
She could be a grandmother?
As if she's listening. Yeah, she could be. She's, what, 40
nowadays,
something?
Nowadays, yeah, you could be 30 and be a grandmother. You could be a grandmother. Oh dear, if you saw the look I was getting there.
If Paul had ducked out of the way just then, there would have been a look burned onto the opposite wall.
I'm not saying you should be a grandmother, I'm saying that if you were to be,
and he's not saying you look like a grandmother.
Although
that was drunk behind the bike sheds and all that, and you know.
Would it be illegal, strictly speaking?
No, that's very true. Yeah, you'd have to be promiscuous.
It'd be 16 and 9 months to have the baby.
But there are people having kids, you know.
Hang on, whoa, Jen, you're not 34? Now I got to look.
This isn't fair.
It's like a competition.
You've only added 4 years to a life that I added a generation to. I feel like I did worse.
Well, true. Yeah.
What other films have we not seen that we want to slag off?
Well, yeah, Tooth Fairy.
The Rock.
Exactly, because The Rock, why? It took Arnie 20 or 30 years to go from, I may have made this point before, but it rings a bell in my head if I
make
else.
It again.
Fair enough. It took Arnie 20 or 30 years to go from action hero down to comedy film, you know, kiddie friendly, losing your way, and The Rock has done it in about 3 years. Mm. He's gone from, I can't remember, what was his, Scorpion King wasn't bad, but it had potential to do more.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the Jungle, or The Rundown in America, I really liked, and I thought that was going more adult. Even Sean William Scott doing similar, and then Sean William Scott has kind of vanished, and The Rock is now just churning out kiddie friendly Vin Diesel, the pacifist level. What are you doing, men?
Oh dear. Exactly. Men, be men.
Well, seriously.
Not babysitters. What are you doing?
Or at least if you're going to do a kiddie-friendly film, have a solid, decent action backlog first.
I enjoyed
just do mediocre action films and then even worse kiddie films.
I enjoyed Mark Kermode's point on it, which quite simply, he said, for starters, rubbish anyway. It's just rubbish. Mm. But one bit he wanted to focus on was the lack of logic in it. The fact, a film that doesn't even follow its internal logic.
Yeah.
Because the film's about The Rock meets this woman, and she's got a kid, and so she puts some money under the pillow.
The Rock sort of ruins the Tooth Fairy story.
Yeah, because the kids put a tooth under the pillow. Mum comes in, puts some money. The Rock needs some money. Which is why he's doing the film, I think. but he goes under the pillow, gets the money out, and then he's whisked off to Tooth Fairy Land, and Julie Andrews says, "You should not do that. Now you will be the Tooth Fairy, and you will go and do this and all that." But kind of earlier in the film, they're saying that parents do it,
yes.
And then at the end of the film, they're saying that the Tooth Fairy does it, and it doesn't. The two don't really balance up. Like later in the film, no other parent really does it. It's just kind of, it sort of doesn't fit its own internal logic. In which case, you know,
it'd be it'd make more sense if he had gone to steal the money, or the parents didn't believe. Or maybe that's the point. Maybe all the tooth fairies do. Tooth fairies turn up, take the money and the tooth.
Maybe.
And then the kids think that the parents.
I think we're going too far with the film we haven't even seen in the first place.
However, your idea of the tooth fairy is a metaphor for The Rock's decision making for this film. I actually quite like. He needed the money, goes to get the money. Julie Andrews / the studio says, "No, you can't have the money unless you do this humiliating job first.
You are now the tooth fairy.
I'll do this if I can get some cash at the end of
it. We'll find out one day.
Yeah, I think that works.
Furry Vengeance is also out, which is just
which I know nothing about except Brendan that title Fraser isn't good.
Yeah,
the trailer
just
looks awful.
No.
And the poster looks awful. It's all looks awful.
So again, Brendan Fraser, The Mummy went quite well, quite lively.
Yeah.
Actually, The Mummy will come up in context of Prince of Persia later as well. And yet, he's sort of lost his way slightly.
He has lost his way. It's a bit of a shame. Bit of a shame on that one, but no interest in seeing that at all.
No. Street Dance 3D.
See, Street Dance 3D, weirdly, it's very well reviewed on Rotten Tomatoes, sort of 85% positive reviews.
Top the box office in the UK.
At the same time, that's mainly because it's the only 3D film out at the moment, so it's in all the screens.
Does that mean that the 3D is the future?
It costs more. No.
Oh, no, we'll actually back onto this one.
Weirdly, no, because.
I mean, Street Dance is the future.
Yeah.
Okay,
possibly. Although, because the fourth Shrek film has been number one in the box office in America, and it's in 3D. But numbers are lower than people were thinking it was going to be. I think it's done sort of $70 million-ish opening weekend, something like that, which is perfectly respectable. But people were thinking, you know, fourth film in a big franchise, 3D, it's going to be a huge opening. And it hasn't been. Mainly because people are thinking it's not a very good film.
Well, the last one was rubbish, so it didn't really.
So I think 3D may not be. I think maybe people are starting to think 3D works. If you've got a decent film, then you add 3D onto it and you'll make even more money. If you've got a terrible film, put 3D onto it, you'll put off people from going to see it at all, because then it's twice the price or something rubbish. Apparently Alice in Wonderland has just passed $1 billion worldwide.
Really?
Well, and not many films have done that, but it's mainly because it's one of the more popular 3D films there have been. So again, that's because, people disagreed about the quality of the film, but it was a fundamentally at least halfway decent film people wanted to see in 3D, so people paid the extra money. But Street Dance, very well reviewed. And I don't dance personally because I look ridiculous. But I would, apparently the dancing in this is very good. And it's sort of like singing. I can appreciate well done singing. And it's the same with dancing. So if done well, I think I might find the plot ridiculous. But if the dancing's good, I might think, well, it's worth a watch.
Yeah.
It's not for me.
I don't see it, actually.
Yeah, I'd be willing to see it. I think if there's nothing else on but I fancy going to the cinema, this would be a viable option for me.
The thing is, I think it's... because it's a British film, I think it might do well internationally. I don't know how it's doing in, you know, if it's actually being sold to other countries or what, but you know, it seems quite, you know, because American did step up and that sort of thing. I think it would be even more popular here in Britain if it was Morris Dance 3D. I think
that is very
true. Fantastic. Yeah.
It's like the sticks and the bells are coming right at you. Because foreign listeners may not know that Morris Dance, it's all the rage now. You get it in the streets. It's sort of, you know, street Morris Dance is, you know, the sort of blending of Morris Dance and hip hop.
Yeah.
And it's taking it to a new level.
Is there a new sitcom out on one of the restricted channels about Morris dancing?
Is there?
I think there is, yeah.
When you say one of the restricted channels, you mean one of the adult channels?
No, one of the non free view channels.
Oh right.
Yeah.
Really? Because for a second I was imagining a porn sitcom about Morris dancing. Which is the weirdest thing I've ever contemplated.
Yeah,
in my life.
That one, banging sticks together. No, that's all kinds of wrong.
I saw some Morris dancing this year.
Did you?
Yeah, May Day in Cornwall. Beautiful. Oh,
lovely. Beautiful. There you go. A little bit of Morris dancing.
It's good.
And if you've never heard of Morris dancing, just look it up on YouTube. Be prepared to laugh.
Yeah.
But imagine it in 3D.
Exactly.
As a porn film on a sitcom.
No.
It'd be hilarious.
Wonderful. But anyway. Those are all the films we haven't seen.
Here's a film we have seen.
That was the banter bit.
Well, you've seen. Yes. Would you like to tell us about Prince of Persia?
This is Prince of Persia, which is based on a game. And I'd actually say it's one of the more successful film game versions I've seen, actually. It's not... Well, yeah, I think you liked it slightly more than I did. I did not like it.
I haven't
got... You were quite effusive about it.
Yeah, I've got absolutely no idea about the game. I've never played it. Never really knew that this was actually an adaptation from a game. And I really, really enjoyed it. I think the atmosphere of it, the colours of it, the action... Yeah, fully involved, really loved it.
Fair enough. And you even took a belly dancing belt along with you.
Yeah, that was by accident.
Yeah. Oh, and you just happened to have a belly dancing belt in your bag.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I've taken it up, and I just had the class that day, so it was in my bag anyway.
Yeah.
You could have made it Prince of Persia 3D by sort of leaping up on the front row and
giving it a shake.
Exactly.
See, I think the reason it works, I mean, because I did quite enjoy it, and I'll get into specifics, but game wise, because I've only played one of the recent games. There was the original sort of sideways scrolling, jumping over platforms thing, and the modern games are very much, you know, shimming up walls and backflipping across rooms and huge complicated sword fights. But plot-wise, you've got some sand that can turn back time, and the rest of it is all dressed around that. And sensibly, what they've done is just take the core elements and then construct a film around it, rather than trying to make it work too much. Mm. And also started with a film that only has a couple of significant bits to it. I was talking with a game that only has those sort of significant images. And so that you have a dagger that can turn back time, and you have a hero that can run and jump off walls, and then that's it. And then they had free reign to do what they want. So look, I mean, similar-ish to Tomb Raider, but more successfully. Because Tomb Raider wasn't great, it wasn't terrible. But
it was terrible, but
what they could have done with that, they bolted on a bit too, well, they're throwing a giant robot, and it sort of went
you
a bit too far
wrong. You could definitely
see
with Tomb Raider that there was levels. There was absolutely, scenes were levels, and that was it. Whereas with this...
because I don't know the games too well. I don't know if there... I mean, there's a main bad guy who's sort of throws spikes and can... jet them out of his body, not sort of his armour. It's nothing too supernatural, and I don't know if he's a main boss in the game or not, but it doesn't matter because he works as a villain, and so it's fine. Jake Gyllenhaal is believable, I think, as the prince.
Good accent,
yeah, for a film that's, well, actually I was going to say,
was
for
he
a film that's
Arabian,
meant to be, but
kind of like
everyone has English accents.
So
across the board, because that's how people in the Middle East speak.
It's the empire view of the world, is it?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I think
I think that's actually, yeah, maybe, well, that's, yeah, a little bit of a feel of that.
I think they probably just thought, well, we can't have American voices because that would be weird in the Middle East, apparently, because Americans need to feel it somewhere foreign. So
they just picked a random one. Could have Welsh. Pick a random one. You know, the Prince of Persia. It's out of time.
That's a very good point. But yeah, actually, I mean, it's weird because it sounds quite normal listening to it, just because for us they're just normal English accents, and yet I have no idea really why they went that. Probably because most of the cast is English.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wonder if there's just a few people who couldn't do accents.
Yeah,
so, like,
make everyone English.
Everyone write down what accents you can do. Whatever polls the most, we'll do that.
Right.
Oh, it's French.
Where's your CV? Come on, let's go.
That's why I am the Prince of Persia.
He does very good wire work, though, actually, and he's very comfortably likable.
Yeah, well, I read apparently he did a lot or most of his own stunts, which actually doesn't surprise me. There weren't too many of, you know, backflips off the wall and he drops out of view and then it pops in as Jake Gyllenhaal. One criticism, action-wise, that's true of so many films, is that it was edited too quickly and too choppily, a little bit too fast moves. You can't often exactly see what's going on. And for something which is quite cool, with lots of parkour and the rest of it, I kind of want to see that. I just want to see a big wide shot of him running across a village, backflipping off stuff. And because a lot of it was either CGI or wild, you'd have thought they could string it together in at least relatively long shots. But they didn't quite do that. And some fight sequences are a bit too choppy. And I think it's little things like that that keep me from going, oh, I really enjoyed it. Because I did enjoy it. But there's just a slight qualification. I think it's little things like that. Okay. But nothing too serious. It's still sort of enjoyable action-adventure romp. And chemistry between him and Gemma Arterton is pretty good as well.
Yes.
Which is, there's a lot of... There's a little bit too much of them being about to kiss, but then not, and sort of, you know, lingering looks, but then turning
nothing.
Only
a couple of times. But it's no worse than like an Indiana Jones film. I mean,
no, true. And also, more often than not, it's because one of them is trying to nick something off the other one.
Yes.
And trying to distract them.
Yeah.
Yes, which kind of works. Ben Kingsley is the... I feel I'm giving something away, but if you've ever seen a film, I'm not. Because Ben Kingsley...
Is he a baddie?
Well, no. Ooh. Ben, you meet the king, friendly, ageing king,
right.
And his brother, played by Ben Kingsley.
Is he the brother? I was going
to
ask if
Ben Kingsley plays the brother, who always seems to have been happy with a behind-the-scenes role and his black goatee.
Now, I've seen the Lion King.
To the brothers.
I've seen The Lion King and lots of Shakespeare now, I'm pretty sure.
If you're thinking, I've never seen the king before, but I've seen a lot of Ben Kingsley, and he seems to be wearing a goatee and looking evilly to himself. But he's being friendly, I'm sure it'll all be fine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, Gandhi again.
Yeah, so I may be giving this away, but if so, I'm amazed. Yeah. And also, weirdly, because there's three brothers, with Jake Gyllenhaal being the adopted one, but welcomed as one of the family. So he's also a little bit distant, but still family. One of the brothers I didn't recognise, but the main brother, who ends up wanting to become king when something might happen, is played by Richard Coyle. Jeff from Coupling.
Yeah. So he could have done it as a Welsh.
So he could have done it as a Welsh, yeah. And again, because I'm only ever really seen him in Coupling,
yes.
Where he plays, if you've never seen Coupling, he plays sort of a Welsh freak,
yeah.
Ultimately, who just has no, you know, can barely
he's
function.
Not a freak.
He's a lovable freak.
He's just a loser.
He's a social freak,
and
he's a sexual pervert.
But things like, I mean, just episodes of Coupling, like, I just couldn't, you know, when he's trying to give an impassioned speech to his troops, and all I could hear was him in Coupling just going, breasts.
Exactly.
Which, look up Coupling, actually, no, I was going to say, look, you know, search for Coupling breasts, and
I think that's more about your brain than his performance. I think he did a very good performance.
He's extremely good.
Americans also may be thinking, Coupling, we had that over here. You didn't have the Coupling.
There's a reason that the US version of Coupling got cancelled after an episode or two. Yeah. I've always really wanted to
try
see
the
it,
British
actually.
One.
Yes. Yeah. Which ran for four series. Four series of a British series is almost one complete. Actually, now it's like one of the bit series of American, because they did about nine episodes.
As many as we ever get to.
Yeah. So it ran for a long time.
But with this film, I think that, like you were saying about the device, is obviously this dagger that can turn back time, but it's not overused. There's a limit on it, and it does give a lot more tension and necessity to different scenes.
Yeah, see, again, in a little video gaming sort of way, because, I mean, I don't really, having not really played the game, but the gist is, you know, if you're climbing a wall and you fall off, you said, oh, I will use the dagger, and you go back, and then you can do it properly. And in the film, it would have been very easy for them to say, oh, I've got this dagger and you can do whatever you want. But, as you say, then it would have been, oh, you know, this hasn't gone quite according to plan, let's turn back time again. Mm. But instead, because there are sands of time in the dagger handle, and they sort of got one, the girl has got a little bit of refill, but then that's it. And he should, so they use it a couple of times, but that's all they can do. And they know that they can only use it a couple of times. So it's only ever a serious, oh, we've got, you know, this is the worst it could ever be. Mm. And then other times, bad things happen, and you know, you're not thinking, oh, I'll just use the dagger, it's a solve-all solution,
because
you know they can't. So they've just got to roll with it and fix it and move on, which makes it less irritating.
So with that, together with the atmosphere, the costumes, the scenery, the
set... Yeah, visually, it does work well.
Okay.
Really, really good.
So there could be a sequel? Could be a Prince of Persia 2, the Masters of Time, the Carenza of Time. You know,
Masters of Time, I'm up for that.
That sounds much better, doesn't it?
Move Possibly. Over, Gemma.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I think it's telling as well, because Jen, you don't entirely like Gemma Arterton. It's more just annoyance at her.
Yeah,
career
I'm
level.
Just incredibly.
And when she first appeared on screen, I was sitting next to Jen and just heard her just go. But the fact that you quite like
the guy's
the
made a similar voice.
Well, yeah. but
still like the film.
Yes,
and
you
right.
didn't mind her in it.
No,
I mean, this is the because I haven't seen the film you mentioned a couple of weeks ago, which
Disappearance
is
of Alice Creed.
Yes, which she has a far more meaty.
AKA
Marvel.
Alice. Where the is Alice?
Yeah. and I think, I mean, she really, that sounds like a role she can probably get her teeth into. But this is the, because after Clash of the Titans, where she's kind of just decorative background viewing, and Quantum of Solace, where she's basically the same part, this, she actually has stuff to do and sort of gets stuck in.
Yeah.
And, you know, has some banter and has some character, and, yeah, she's actually worth watching rather than just feeling she's thrown in there for eye candy.
Yeah. So I would recommend this film.
Actually, that says, it's slightly cynical, but there is one moment where you laugh, but even I laugh, because she's hot. No, don't get me wrong. But there's a point near the start where they sort of, because she's the princess of a town that, or a city that's conquered.
And she's meant to be renowned for being very beautiful.
Yeah, sort of a Helen of Troy-esque. And she's a good-looking woman, don't get me wrong. But when the troops come in and sort of she throws her hood back, and across these men you see this... Oh, no.
You can just tell that it's a load of extras going, when this happens...
Yes, go,
go,
ooh.
Go, ooh.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh.
It doesn't quite work.
I kill even, the moment somewhat.
Yes, I think even in Troy... or any Troy, they've never quite done that. She's Helen of Troy, the most beautiful woman ever, and everyone just sort of goes, oh, fair enough. Rather than actually, wow, look at you.
Helen of Troy, you can't, oh, fair enough. It doesn't work, does it?
I'm a detached
to be honest, in Troy, she wasn't that great,
she's
all right, was she?
Yeah, she'll do.
Right, she's just blonde.
Launched 1,000 ships, but only because they couldn't get rid of her.
No, dying crew, she wasn't a bad Helen of Troy.
She was all right,
yeah,
but it wasn't breathtaking.
Well, I remember, as my now ex-flatmate has made the point several times about Batman, saying in the comic Batman, no, you could never cast the Batman from the comics, because that doesn't exist. You can't have a huge man who can do play all the parts. It just doesn't happen. And likewise, the most beautiful woman in the world, if the bit of casting went out,
is
you can't get
normal.
Her. Yeah, you are never going to get someone that everyone will just look at and go, yep, yeah, she is the most beautiful woman in the world.
That's the one.
That's the right casting for this role. All you need
is
someone who's quite hot.
Eye of the beholder.
That's what ugly chicks say, Jen.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel bad for saying that, because it's not true.
Anyway.
Should we move on?
Yeah.
So, Prince of Persia, basically give it a shot.
Loved it.
And also, just one thing that's only just occurred to me. I think I view it in a vaguely favourable way, because it's a big, huge, major tentpole film that they haven't thrown 3D at.
That's nice.
And it almost, I wonder if it's because it's quite fast-paced, they couldn't do it, or there's a lot of CGI in it, but decent CGI, so it would be too difficult to do.
Don't need to.
I'm beginning to feel 3D is a bit of an issue for you guys, you know.
Do you think?
No, but if they filmed it in 3D, then great. But it's because they haven't tried to post-convert it. They said, here's the film, just watch it. And the whole way through, I wasn't thinking, oh, I wish it was in 3D, this would have been worth an extra few quid. So, anyway.
Would have been cool, I imagine, but...
Not essential.
Out. We'll get Gibraltar to next week.
Is that worse than being a grandmother?
That's worse than all of ever.
I feel we should up our game then.
Okay, Movie Band listeners, well, you can vote. Who would you like next week?
Yeah.
Jenny or Gemma Arterton?
If you know someone who represents Gemma Arterton, then she'd be willing to come in, you know, just have a chat. 5-minute chat with Jenny Arterton is frankly worth an hour with Jen.
Of course they're going to pick Gemma Arterton.
They might not. You might have got a fan base here. Let's find out. Let's put it to the challenge. Vote Gemma, text 01... don't text anything because we haven't got a text
just
number.
Just email us or tweet us about who you like more.
Podcast at movieband.co.uk.
Jenny or Gemma.
Jen
doesn't read the tweets or the emails. We'll just lie and tell her you love her. Okay. It's fine.
Good.
And also... Jen, we would not replace you.
Yes, you would if you could.
No, not for the podcast.
No.
Just for general eye candy. You know, Gemma Arterton wins every time, but that's different.
Moving on.
Speaking of emails and tweets, let's do your emails and tweets. So, we had an email from Jed who says, picking up on what you said about Wall Street 2, which we talked of last time, I believe.
Yes.
Really looking forward to it, mostly because I met Oliver Stone. Jed has met Oliver Stone.
Name dropping fantastic.
Got his autograph at a screening of... What? W. Oh, you're good. Yes, very good. That was in Cannes, indeed, promoting. He is in Cannes promoting Wall Street 2.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Well, he said it's very fun to see him on. Oh, no, see him on TV at the red carpet.
Yeah, indeed.
Jed and I have been there with a portable TV, watching it while the red
carpet
went on behind him.
Could be. He does say, but really, this is based on what we said last week, but really, Shia LaBeouf ought to be thankful for the success that he's had and that, frankly, he doesn't completely deserve. Yeah, he was good in Holes, but does anyone really remember that?
I've never heard of Holes.
Never seen Holes.
Was that a sequel to Hole?
The Hole, wasn't it?
Yes.
That was the Keira Knightley.
Yes.
Whoppah film.
I think there was more to it than just Keira Knightley going whoppah, but Paul's has gone bright red. Is it just the thought of Keira Knightley's, at the time, in fact, slightly underage
to be
chest?
Fair,
which
a little bit. To be fair, it was whoppah, whoppah. I think you're fine, but...
I think, love Keira Knightley, though I do, and without meaning to besmirch her build, I think whoppah might be going a bit far.
Yeah, like, more...
Maybe it's whoa.
Where's the paw?
Oh, no. You don't want to be faced with a topless Keira Knightley and go, where's your paw?
That's the best review of the film I've seen.
I'm sure.
There's no paw.
I'm sure our dad's a lovely man, but I don't want to drag him into that. Anyway.
Jed continues. Also, I've seen The Losers. Now, The Losers is... So let's see.
I think it's almost out on DVD in America.
It's out there years ago. So let's see what Jed makes of it. I said a cross between The A-Team and G.I. Joe for adults. The film does not aim to be realistic in any fashion, helped by a large dose of the ridiculous, including pop culture references such as Slumdog Millionaire to Journey. Gotta love Journey.
Oh, yes.
Any film that references Journey is fine by me. By the time an entire island is consumed into a vortex and disappears into the sea...
Oh, ruin it, why don't
audiences
you?
Should know not to take the film too seriously. Kick back, enjoy the ride. Sounds a bit like Lost, which is now finished, so I think I need something to pick up for the Lost mantle. This may be it. This is nothing spectacular or groundbreaking, but it will pass the time amazingly well. Ultimately, it's a guy's movie, so break out the beer and the popcorn.
Beer in a cinema? If only.
Exactly. How does that work?
Do they get beer in their cinemas?
I know Americans put butter on popcorn. Do you put beer on Singapore? Do you get beer on popcorn?
Maybe.
It's like weird.
Well, I suppose in the UK we have like steak and ale pie. We have beer in a lot of things. Could you have a beery popcorn, couldn't you?
Yeah, well, I thought so.
Float a couple of bits in it. And
the popcorn beer floats.
Down the hatch.
Yeah. Ooh. No, see, the loser, yeah, because it does look a little bit like sub 8 or A team without the name attached.
Mm.
But that isn't necessarily a bad thing if it goes a slightly different route. And I think in the UK anyway, there's a reasonable gap between the two. So we shall see.
We shall.
Also, an email from Martin McGoohan. McGoughan.
McGoohan.
McGoohan.
McGoughan. Martin.
Martin. Yeah. Martin, the old man. Yeah. Saying you might be able to get Defenders on iTunes, at least you can. Defendor. iTunes, at least you can in the US, which we were talking about last week.
Woody Harrelson film, yes. I believe. Yes.
Yeah, which sounded like it's worth a watch. I had a laugh listening to you trying to decipher Maid Marian's lineage/royal connection. You sound like most of my fellow citizens when asked about European history. Or, in fact, us when asked about European history.
Too much.
We've got... Too much. We have limited historical knowledge.
I think we were trying to connect her to King Richard and King John. Was that
yes,
right?
Yes, I mean, I know she was, because... Yeah.
Quite
she's
work
meant
it
to
out.
Be...
Oh, King Henry VIII. Elizabeth II.
I was reminded, thinking about history. I will just churn out one joke from The Bugle. Which is a podcast just this week because it's to do with history and it's quite funny. Saying Henry VIII was named because he wanted to have 8 wives, only got as far as 6, but in 8 pieces, which is close enough.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Very good.
Anyway, and email from Callum saying just watch the John Lewis ad as per recommendation, which I think you posted on Facebook.
Someone did. I think he did.
Well,
maybe.
Yes, which we mentioned last week, talking about tear jerking adverts. So maybe it's because I have no idea who John Lewis is or what he's trying to sell me. Maybe it's because I have no heart, but this ad had little to no effect on me. Love the show, guys. Oh, thank you very much.
We have an effect on him, even if John Lewis doesn't.
I think in part, knowing that John Lewis is sort of a very long-standing British department store retailer that basically sells everything. And so it's the kind of store that you could go through. You know, when you need baby stuff, you can go to John Lewis. When you need teenager stuff, go to John Lewis. When you're growing up, moving out, go to John Lewis. So knowing that, the advert spelling out all those stages of life.
I recall seeing the advert for the first time. And if you haven't seen it, it's just someone growing up and using different things in life. Mm. And then it ends. But until that moment at the very end of it, you sort of go, what's this for? John Lewis. Okay. Didn't see that coming, to be honest. It could have been literally anything, really.
That's true.
It's sort of just a person
don't
living.
Do drugs.
But,
okay.
But I think that's why it works. When you can see it again, you go,
might go to John Lewis.
Yeah.
I'm going on Friday, so it's
worked
on me.
Oh, for
right.
There you go.
Any specific reason? Just for...
We'll buy a cot.
Right.
Yeah. It'd be the first chapter of the advert.
Are you filming it so you can make the next generation?
Should I do that? I think we should...
Document every stage of it. That won't embarrass your child in years to come.
I don't think I've mentioned it. I've having a child, by the way. Podcast listeners may not be aware. They might just think that my bed's a bit too big for me. You know? I'm rolling around in it. I think just let's have a cot.
So he needs to keep you restrained.
Indeed.
So he's buying you an adult cage.
Yes, that's right. Pretty much. So we're going to get a cot. For the mini banterer. Exactly. There you go.
We'll
have to get him or her in.
Him or her, we don't know.
Yes.
Yeah. Have to get it in.
Him in. Yeah. We'll have to do lots of, like, children's specials.
Exactly, yes.
Like that.
Well, believe me, in about a year's time, I'm going to know everything about every preschool kind of, monstrosity. The other night, we started to sit down and watch a Disney film. We thought, I've got a few of them. I thought, let's watch it. Winnie the Pooh. Let's put it on for old time's sake. We got 10 minutes in and thought, should we save this? Should we watch an 18 while we can?
Yeah, it's true. Because we're going to see this 8,000 times in the next 6 months.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So, shall we move on to another film?
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to the half a film that I've seen, which is Bad Lieutenant, Board of Call, New Orleans, or Bull Pocono.
Bad Lit Pocono, which you seem to have written down. It's all about a chicken played by Nicolas Cage.
Exactly. Yeah, chicken coop. Nicolas Coop? No. Cage, yes.
Yeah.
It's a film by two words. Oh, no, five. Seven words, doesn't matter. It's directed by Werner Herzog. And who is this sort of delightfully bonkers, I think he's German, might be Austrian, film director.
Yes, Herbert and the Angry Inch.
Possibly.
Herbert and the Angry Inch? Hedwig.
Could be.
Harry Potter's Owl.
He
did, very short
exactly. I have seen one from he did called Fitzcarraldo, which is a bonkers film about a guy who is trying to get... this guy, played by Klaus Kinski, and it's odd, it was filmed in English and then dubbed into German.
Right.
But if you're watching it in England... or in America, you have to watch it. There's only one version, that's the one.
Oh, I see. So
in
German. They then wipe the dialogue.
But you can see that they're mouthing it in English. I go, what are you saying? Tell me.
Can you put on English subtitles and then see that what they're reading doesn't actually match the subtitles?
Yeah. I guess
it's been translated back and forth.
But it's a film about a guy who is trying to get a massive boat across a mountain, because the only way to get it from one river to another is to actually push it.
Yeah.
And to film it, they pushed a boat up a mountain. And a lot of people broke their backs, and yeah, really? they just did it. You know, it's crazy. So Werner Herzog is this kind of crazy auteur director,
lunatic genius,
and he decided to pick up where Abel Ferreira left off with the original Bad Lieutenant with Harvey Keitel, which I haven't seen actually. I've recorded it. It was on TV the other week, but I look forward to seeing it, because yeah, the Nicolas Cage film is again, Nicolas Cage has sort of picked up this kind of delightfully bonkers thing from the director and run with it. And then some. And it is actually great to see Nicolas Cage again doing that sort of acting, as opposed to the very kind of morose, low sort of tone, you know, films like Knowing and, you know, these blockbuster things where he just drifts through it and mutters a bit.
Yes.
But it's great to see him.
Presumably sort of where he's subservient to the action, like Face Off. And,
yeah,
and like,
it's good to see him, like, raising Arizona, leaving Las Vegas, this one, when he can play bonkers really, really well. And he does. He is obviously a bad lieutenant. He is a bad guy in it. He is a cop, but he's not a good guy. And he does. I've only seen half of it, so I've only seen a few of the bad things he does.
Right.
And yeah, he's just quite corrupt generally, and it's sort of amusing to watch it. Now, the reason I walked out is really just because it was very well done. Very well done. Good acting film. Not. It's kind of using a, you know, a cop film kind of a template, but it's not, I found, thrilling enough to be a thriller. The plot didn't carry me along.
It's more just sort of tracking him as he goes.
Because it's more about him, exactly. Okay. It's not about an overarching story as much. It's more about just this guy. As a result, the story didn't grip me, and it was a nice day. And I thought, I could be in here watching Nicolas Cage be angry. I'll see it another time, maybe, but I've seen enough for now. It was nice weather out, I thought.
It's the problem with having a cinema subscription thing, where you can just... Because it's not like you paid money, you just sort of, you can go and see anything. So if you'd actually paid your money, you would have thought, all right, then I'll stay here for another hour and watch it.
Well, speaking as a stand-up, you get these comedy clubs where they say, oh, it's free entry, you know, the money's just come from the bar, we'll pay you separately, but it's, you know, no one's paid anything. And you think, no, they've got to, if they pay just a pound or two, they've got a commitment,
investment
in the evening, and they'll stay and stick around. If they pay nothing, they expect nothing, which is what I did, and so I walked out. But if I paid a quid, I'd have stayed probably.
But
I think it's well worth a look. I think I would actually recommend it from what I've seen so far.
Yeah, it does. And, I mean, everything I've read just seems to imply, well, I have a lot of time for stuff that's slightly mental, provided it's not sort of too self-indulgently mental. But mental with a point. And this sounds like it fits the bill entirely.
It goes a bit iguana crazy later on, in the film, I'm told. Including iguana cam and stuff like that. But yeah.
Yeah, but I think also it's an expectations thing. Because when people heard it was a remake, or initially a remake, and people, no, why are you remaking it? And then it sort of goes, well, it's not a remake, it's sort of the same principle, but kind of a new film. So it sounds vaguely Italian Job-esque, in a really weird comparison. Yeah. And then it's not really a remake, you know, it sort of takes the core elements and then just makes a new film.
Yeah.
Just general talk online seems to be remarkably positive.
Yeah, it's sort of, it's a good film. It's kind of, if it was actually, I think it should be out in the winter, really, because then you're probably more likely to, you know, right now it sort of feels kind of at odds with this, you know, kind of Prince of Persia, a colourful blockbuster affair is kind of right for now. This kind of doesn't kind of feel right, but it's good. And I'm well aware some people listening might think, well, you know, you shouldn't be talking about a film unless you've seen all of it. You didn't see it all properly, so you can't review it. Like I said earlier, you're not paying us, okay? You pay me money, I'll sit through the rest of it, okay? You pay me money.
But also, I think weirdly, because if someone walks out of a film and then says, oh, it was rubbish, I walked out, then I think, well, no, you don't know it was rubbish, because it might have been... Yeah, it might have been a difficult first half that was setting up the payoff later or something like that. Whereas you aren't saying, I walked out because it was terrible, and that's what, you know, so I'm saying it's terrible. You're saying you quite enjoyed it, you just didn't happen to see the whole thing.
It's the first time I think I've walked out of a film actually quite liking it.
Yeah, that you didn't hate.
I don't know why I did, to be honest. But,
so I think you can justifiably say, yeah, it looks like it's worth a watch.
I would recommend it.
Yeah.
From just the bad Lou that I saw.
Well, yes. You saw a bad Lou.
I did see a bad Lou. Oh, yeah. Big bad Lou. Yeah.
I was thinking more toiletry.
A couple of films I did see the entirety, I'm delighted to say, on DVD. I'll quickly mention. One is called Waitress, which is a fine little movie with Kerry Russell and Cheryl Hines. And a lovely little film. And Nathan Fillion, in fact. Just a nice little sweet, sort of slightly rom-com. Not much com in it, more rom.
Right.
But it's just about a pie shop. Kind of similar to Pushing Daisies. Remember the pie shop thing and that? Kind of similar tone, and also about a pie shop, and looks good enough to eat. And, good little movie. Another thing similar to... Well, in title similar, is the film Hunger, which is in no way similar to Waitress. Yeah, I saw it with Jen yesterday. It's
yeah,
a tough watch, would you say that?
Yeah. Yes.
Is it about someone who just fancies a sandwich and goes out to the shops to get one?
Yeah. No.
Not quite. No. Not quite.
That's like, I think I know what film it is.
That's the part I brought to the viewing. Yeah.
What, you brought a sandwich?
I had my lunch.
Oh, right. While watching... Because this is about, if I remember rightly, a hunger strike.
Indeed. Yes. By, in fact, Bobby Sands, one of your relations.
Not that I know of.
Although in the, his dad's in the film.
Is he spelled with a Y?
His dad's in the film and he's called John Sands.
Oh, like, really?
Yeah. Hey, at one point they go, what's your name? John Sands. Oh, really?
Okay. Is it spelled with a Y?
No.
Oh, I'll see. Why dropper?
I know.
So, does it really make much sense?
But it is. It's actually been co-written by my wife's cousin's husband,
right?
Who maybe at some point I should try and interview for this Indeed podcast. But it's because which is odd because he's a nice guy. He's a lovely fella. He's quite bright and jolly. But this film is everything that is not that. It's right. Within the first 10 minutes. There's feces on the wall, and there's people. You know, IRA prisoners on a no wash protest, and so they're not washing or anything. And then you've got a bit of prison brutality, and it's all based on, you know, true story of, yes, of Bobby Sands, and then he goes on hunger strike, and yeah, just wastes away really, and it's a horrifying watch really, but it's done by this director Steve McQueen, not that Steve McQueen, a different Steve McQueen, and so he's bringing it to it, I suppose, some sort of, you know, he's an artist, it's his first film he's done, so he's bringing that sort of visual flair to it. And I know, Jen, as an artist, you probably know more about this than I do.
Well, yeah, I think it wasn't a particularly wordy film, was it? There was only one scene in particular that had a lot of dialogue.
First 40 minutes is pretty much in silence. Okay. And then the middle scene of is a 15-minute long scene, one shot, one take.
Wow.
Just dialogue. And then after that, it's pretty silent again.
Yeah, yeah. You say wow. I was watching this scene and I was thinking, yeah, this is quite a good feat. But they're talking about different energies and rhythms, and it wasn't really shown in the cut. I think it was just, you could tell that it was a bit of an experiment or a badge of honour to be able to do this scene. But I think actually it would have been better if it had a few cuts in it, because it started to just sag a little bit, to be honest. Sorry, it was a very good effort and it was a beautiful scene, but yeah, I think this film in very way was visually very stunning, and it was moving and lots of nuances. It didn't seem to be overridingly political. It was about one guy suffering and lots of references to his youth to kind of like reinforce his motives for it, but worthy, but a bit difficult.
Tough watch. Tough watch. Not really Friday night viewing, and when it came out in the cinema, I imagine a lot of full tubs of popcorn came out again. You'd feel a bit uncomfortable munching away
really?
Through it.
Wouldn't it? Well, Jen had her lunch, wouldn't it? Just make you think, I'm really hungry now.
Stupidly.
Like Super Size Me left you thinking you want a McDonald's.
Yeah, but that's different, because in that film, he's eating a lot. Where in this film, they're kind of making a point about not eating. You feel a little bit bad, I think.
And weirdly, I actually got my lunch because Paul's like, I'm watching this. Oh, okay, let's watch it. And I hadn't had lunch, so I had my lunch. And now we're doing the whole kind of... not wash, and the excrement on the walls at that stage, and it's like, nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, don't invite Paul around again then. He's going to rub feces on the walls where he's trying to have lunch.
Well, yeah. What can I say? So, interesting little movie that.
Yeah, so that was a powerful film, but not necessarily casual viewing.
No, I think you need films like this. I think you do need
films
like
this. It's
important
they're made. Yeah, choose your time to watch carefully. Yeah. So should we wrap up with a bit of Desert Island Flicks?
Yes.
Now, we did set this a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? Best Car Chase.
Yes.
We have been inundated. It's been a veritable traffic jam. There's no car chases here, because there is not a room for manoeuvre from all the emails and tweets we've had. We haven't given out the email address, by the way, podcast@moviebanter.co.uk. And may I say thank you to everyone who's emailed in your help with my Edinburgh show.
Oh, yes.
various thoughts on what countries think of their neighbours. Very useful. If you've got any more, keep them coming. Particularly, in fact, I'm slightly broadening the idea now. So it's not just what necessarily your country that you live in thinks of your neighbours, but if you have travelled or been to different countries and have an opinion of other countries know a stereotype in other countries, particularly if anyone knows anything about Africa.
Right.
Has
no one been to Africa? None of our listeners have been there.
Some people have, but no one really wants to tell you what Nigerians think of Angolans or Moroccans think of, you know, Tunisians. It's all a bit vague. So if anyone can sort of pinpoint some exact countries and, you know, some stereotypes, that would be fantastic. And I know it sounds all stereotypical and horrible, but my point is talking about
overcoming those stereotypes.
Exactly. And the fact we're all equally rubbish, just in different ways.
Yeah.
So feel free to email that in if you can. And and also, you've been kind enough to email in your Desert Island Flicks.
Yes. An email from Callum saying shortlist would be Blues Brothers, obviously, Terminator 3, Crane, Fire Engine Car, etc. The Italian Job, the new one. Yeah, I can see that one. You still haven't seen it, have you, Paul?
No, still not.
I still haven't seen Schindler's List. Not famous for its car chases, no, but I was just preempting.
Not so much.
Thinking in terms of films you haven't seen, that one went. The winner would be The Rock. Humvee, Ferrari, police car, cable car, VW bug, chase through San Fran is awesome. Very true. Also, solid movie apart from just the car chasing. Yes, I concur.
Fair point.
Yeah, Michael Bay, when he was slightly more... I think it is Michael Bay. It's Con Air that isn't Michael Bay, but I think should be Michael Bay.
Right.
But The Rock is Michael Bay. When he was slightly more restrained
before
he got a little bit too...
A little bit.
Well, actually, no, the thing is he's silly because... Yeah, anyway, I'm going off on Michael Bay rant. Mm. But yes, I think because it wasn't a sequel. His sequels, he tends to lose it. His initial films, he...
I think you'll find The Rock was San Francisco Bay, but... Enjoy that silence.
Good. If only there would be the silence to enjoy the film.
Thank you. Jed says that my pick for best car chase film isn't an obvious one, but favourite Hollywood car chase ever. It's the Chevy versus BMW's chase in Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Yes.
Mm.
Played entirely for laughs, but terrifically choreographed, full of good action moments, especially when Brad Pitt clobbers an assassin on the head with a golf club, and when another flies through the sliding doors of the Chevy, which the Smiths have stolen from their neighbour.
Yes.
Other good car chases that come to mind include the Nick Cage versus Sean Connery car chase down the streets of San Fran in The Rock,
mm-hmm.
The motorcycle side car chase in Indiana Jones' Last Crusade, several car chases from the Bond films. Good ones come to mind include the rickshaw chase down the streets of India in Octopussy, the oil tanker chase in Miami Airport in Casino Royale, the flipping car with the kazoo sound effect of the man with the golden gun. Perhaps not.
Yeah. Also, Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yeah.
Chase, that's quite good. That's a good car chase.
Not
one of my favourite Bond films.
The back seat with the phone thing and operating by phone in a
No, that is Tomorrow Never Dies, but I'm thinking of the motorbike chase. So actually, in fact, two good car chases.
That is true.
Another email from Martin. See above for earlier attempts to pronounce your surname. Favourite car chase, Mad Max. I'm still convinced people died. And favourite time travel, which was last time, Somewhere in Time. Schmaltzy, but still struck me as a youngster.
I think that is the Christopher Reeve one, because that is very schmaltzy, but actually quite effective.
Was it? And no, isn't that what's the cartoon dinosaur one?
The Incredible Journey.
The Man That Time Forgot.
Ah, yes. Yeah, Somewhere in Time, Christopher Reeve goes back in time as a novelist. And,
okay.
Yeah, schmaltzy, but and sticks to the rules of time travel well. And I don't mind a bit of rom-com time travel. Fine by me, not a problem there. And finally, Gareth Miles emails in saying, car chase that probably most of you haven't seen, The 7-Ups, the lesser-known but vastly superior French Connection follow-up.
Wasn't it French Connection follow-up, French Connection 2?
Well, indeed, but he says there is this third one, third French Connection movie. Insane running time, much zoomery and whizzery through the streets, and ending with a real punch in the chest. Roy Scheider, what a guy. So there you go. Didn't even know about that, but The 7-Ups, one to look out for. So as for us, what are we going to pick? Best car chase? What's it going to be?
The Rock is a good one, but that's also been well picked by people. Something did occur to me while reading... You see, the original French Connection is a classic.
Yes.
But the one that keeps occurring to me, possibly because it sort of stands out in an otherwise quite mediocre film, is on TV the other night, is The Peacemaker.
Okay.
Which is the chase with George Clooney just after his friend gets shot, and then they go on a chase in him in a Mercedes, silver Mercedes, all the bad guys in black BMWs. So clearly some more product placement going on there. But it's just a very sort of quite low key but very believable car chase.
Yeah.
And ending just sort of trying to take them out where he can, and ending in a marketplace quite brutally with him sort of reversing his car and shearing the top off another car and then murdering the driver in cold blood because he's quite annoyed. But yeah, this always stands out for me as a solid car chase.
Fair play to you, fair play. Jennifer?
Actually, listening to these, it reminds me of something that I think I must have seen a few years ago on TV being repeated on a Sunday, and it must be an old British film about the old coast-to-coast kind of ride sets just in the Victorian times.
Okay.
Hmm. I can't remember which one it was. It's like a feel-good, blighty film.
Yes, one of those.
And about stopping for tea.
What hell?
And it's all jinx and laughter.
Yes, yes.
So if I remember what that is,
okay,
I might
one.
Pick that one.
Okay,
but other than that, I actually quite remember the scene from The Transporter.
Ah, yes.
So I think, just to be different, because Mr. and Mrs. Smith is great, but I'm going to go for The Transporter.
Transporter.
Right.
Yeah, got a Transporter and a Peacemaker so far. Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. I don't know. I was tempted by a few because Indiana Jones films, actually, I often forget that they have some very good car chases in there with the tank dragging on the side. Very, very good.
Well, is that a car chase, though? That's a tank and horse.
A vehicle chase, I suppose. Yeah. And some of the Bond films, Back to the Future, even. I'm not going to pick it because I picked that for most films. But, you know, with the Libyans and the through the car park, it's...
It's not much of a... It's basically just a big loop.
Well, it's around a car, but it's a car chase. There's a car and there's a chase.
Yeah, but as cinematic car chases go, it's not a classic. It just happens to be in Back to the Future. Classic.
Well, I just... If anything, you can, anything in Back to the Future. You know, you could say best film set in America, I'd say Back to the Future.
The odometer is all over the place in that scene.
Well, there is that as well. So I think instead I may go for Duel.
Ah, yes.
Being one long one car chase, really. Chase, yeah. It's sort of not necessarily as dramatic or as, you know, kind of effects heavy as a lot of other films. But in terms of racking the tension up, you know, Steven Spielberg, pretty, I think it's his first film, is it? Or
I think it
first
might
or
be.
Second film.
Think, yeah.
But it is just, you know, one long car chase, a film about two guys, one chasing another, and we never quite know why, really. Mm. And racks it all up. So I'll go with that one.
Fair enough. Actually, I remember the other one I was going to mention, which I don't remember well enough to say is my favourite. I still like Peacemaker, but worth a mention is the original Taxi.
Oh, okay.
And even Taxi 2, and Taxi 3 is not quite as good. There may even be a Taxi 4, actually. But the original French Taxi films, which are very good for car chases and general driving and fun, as opposed to the American remake, which is apparently terrible and I've never seen. But worth seeking out.
Yeah, probably.
Very good.
Good, well, I think that's a lot, isn't it?
Yes.
Good. Well, if you've got any thoughts on any of that, podcast@moviebanter.co.uk is the email address.
Yes, or @moviebanter for Twitter.
Indeed, indeed.
Or @moviemistakes for me, and @paulcarenza for
Paul. That's the ones.
We cross all forms of communication.
@GemmaArterton for Jen.
Oh.
Thanks.
Do you want to say goodbye? Given it's your last week, isn't it?
Oh, Jen looks so genuinely shocked and hurt.
Sorry.
It's been a pleasure.
we'll let you come back.
14 years of friendship does not get thrown out of the way just for one
because
hot
one
chick.
Gemma Artisans.
No, now two Gemma Artisans.
Yeah. Now you're talking. Now.
Yes. Okay, I would sell you to slave drivers for two Gemma Artisans. No, I wouldn't. Anyway.
Still Keira Knightley.
Yes.
So anyway, meanwhile, back in the real world, let's say goodbye.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.